and you are here at KPTZ in Port Townsend, and it is time once again for Bureaucracy Now. I'm Taylor Clark. I'm here with my co-host, City Manager John Morrow. Hi, John.
Hi, Taylor. Pleasure.
And we have as our guest today Port Townsend Mayor David Faber.
Hey, Radioland.
And thank you. I think it's been a while since you've been down here, so thank you for...
Yeah, about 3 months, right? It's quarterly I'm showing up.
Oh, good. Yes. Okay. See, it all blends together. Maybe that was one of the days I was gone.
You were gone, indeed.
Ah,
yes, you were here.
Okay, so that's why I don't remember. And so I have a question we've been talking about, but I think we'll sort of get some paperwork out of it. We'll see. I should start with John and say, John, do you have any? I'm trying to remember. Have we spoken since 300 people showed up at
yes.
the?
Yeah. So, let's not discredit the 80 who showed up to the virtual open house.
I was gonna.
Well.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So nearly 400 people have been engaged in the first series of open houses.
That's actually very encouraging.
It's great. And I love this place.
I think it's because of Bureaucracy Now we've been talking.
I think it's worth mentioning what they're talking about here is the golf course open house
right.
from last week.
Yeah, I just said the open house.
Yeah, that's right. There's some oblique references to some public engagement. Yeah.
Well, but I'm encouraged by active public engagement and you
Absolutely.
Know having coming through the pandemic, we've not been able to meet in person, so it was exciting that there we all were.
Mm. Yeah, well, more of that because there are a number of things we're going to be engaging our community with this year. And I get excited about that. And judging by the smile on Mayor Faber's face, he does as well.
I'm always smiling.
True.
What else are we going to be engaging?
Well, we have just off the top of my head, and this kind of gets a little bit into some of how we might spend our time today with Mayor Faber. Previewing our conversation tomorrow with the Jefferson County Chamber of Commerce on the state of the city. And part of that is, both a reflection back at 2022 and how we did and the challenges we faced and some of the lessons we learned, but also looking to this year, which is just chock-a-block with community engagement around everything from, the engagement around the golf course in Mountain View campus, which is into this year, but also community health and wellness and aquatics. What are we going to do with our streets? I hear that quite often. So that's a conversation we have. We kicked off a conversation around deer management with the State Fish and Wildlife Department.
Oh, that was interesting.
End of last year. Yeah. I know you're really excited about
I am excited about that.
We've got parking on our work plan, which we do need some staffing there, but that's another core issue.
That's a big deal.
And of course, housing. So, there's more than just that, but those are five or so really big issues that require a strong community voice for us to determine which direction we want to go.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
so how's that?
I don't even know which topic to do.
Which mic shall we drop? There are three. Is that...
now, there's been some discussion about because in the case of the golf course mm-hmm. effort, you have a contract with a company whose specialty it is, with a consulting firm whose specialty it is to do community outreach. And I know there's been some criticism of the dollars, which to me doesn't set too well because I don't. It sounds like a lot of money to you or me, but from a corporate standpoint, it's probably not a lot of money. It's what you pay for professional services. But that's a kind of a core part of the outreach effort is to bring people in who are experts on that and get them to help you out. Is that?
We're both pointing at each other. We're both.
I wish it was television.
I know.
That was a great moment.
That would be a great moment.
They pointed at each other.
Yeah, because I know that Mayor Faber can answer this question possibly better than I can. Yes, engagement. But here we have a mayor on the air quarterly, every Monday almost, engaging with the community at all the events, saw him at the open house. On a raft of committees.
It's a big part of the job. Right?
It's huge. Yeah. So engagement is critical to this, but also part of what was a determination to go out for and hire Groundswell to do the work work was that they're landscape architects. And so when we're putting together a project that's complex with lots of moving parts and geographically interesting, I mean, we're sitting here at Mountain View campus right now, and maybe not for long because we'll be going to Fort Worden to do the show hopefully soon. But here we are on site of what we're talking about. And there's so many moving parts. There's, you know, this came up in the open house, deed restrictions and what we can and cannot do with the property. You know, slopes, design constraints and opportunities, having somebody who's, you know, really well-versed.
It wasn't just community outreach. Their specialty is landscape architecture.
That's correct. That's correct.
And I'd just like to note, too, that if we were just going to make a decision, yeah, we wouldn't need to hire a professional to steward this whole process. Actually getting the professional engagement or the community engagement at the level that we're seeing right now requires a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of knowledge, too, and understanding of how that's done effectively. And so that's, I think, one of the major reasons why we did want to engage a consultant, because we have a small staff, a staff that works super hard, and we probably get more than 110% out of what we should reasonably expect from them. But having those additional resources at our disposal really allows us to have a full-throated community engagement process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I discussed this with Steve King apropos to the designing the lift station. And they have engineers on staff that could do this. But those engineers are engaged doing other things on a regular basis.
Right.
And so, you know, if the same thing with this is that I'm struck with one other thing you said there, which is interesting. If we were just going to make a decision, and I know there's you know, some people occasionally say, well, the decision has been made. Why are we going through all this horsing around? And the answer is the decision hasn't been made.
Absolutely not.
And this is evidence of that.
Right, yeah. The decision has certainly not been made at this point. I mean, the only decision that was made was to consider whether our community values line up with keeping the golf course as is for the next 100 years, mm-hmm. right? For the next generations that are going to come along. And if it turns out the answer is yes, then the answer is yes. If it turns out the answer is no, then we have to explore what the options happen to be. And that's what this process is all about, figuring out where our community values lie and, you know, where do we want to spend our finite community resources.
It also strikes me that through the community outreach effort that you're doing, you can have a more thoughtful discussion about it. Apropos to what we were talking about before the show started with social media, it's hard to have a thoughtful discussion on social media. It's easy to express an opinion, but hard to be thoughtful.
Could I throw something into the mix here too? Because I'm both inspired by the number of people that were with us last week. And actually, some of the articulated frustrations with the format in a news piece yesterday that I think I might have spoken to last week. But then I want to fuse that with something, both a thank you and kind of just a reflection on an event that we did last night. Both Chief Tom Olson, Public Works Director Steve King, and I met with a group of 20, 25 community members. I won't say where in the city, but you know who you are. And it started with a spirit of, hey, we've got a problem. We want to slow speeds down on our street, and it's dangerous. And maybe there are 25 different perspectives of what the real problem was, and actually really quick to solutions. But we had an hour and a half. Actually, I think it became more like two. We sat. And with a group that size, we were able to engage. People told us the stories. They told us exactly where they lived. We had a map up. We got a whiteboard out.
This is a little like the deer discussion that when people brought their stories.
But I mean, what was great about it, I mean, aside from just the spirit of some really just lovely people who were engaged, it was actually a joy to have a conversation and to listen to people's concerns and then work through our professional expertise of how traffic engineering works. And there were a lot of aha moments. So it was like, oh, from our side, aha, I see the problem. I'm out there all the time in this particular part of our town, almost every day. I understand it from my perspective, but not from theirs, not from their time of day.
Right.
And they didn't understand everything about traffic engineering, because why would you if you're not a traffic engineer like Steve King is? So that forum was a perfect size and scale to have 25 people around the table sharing ideas, learning from each other. 350 or so, that's just virtually impossible because there are too many conversations to have. So at the city, what we're trying to do is find the right format for the right scale. And there's no better format. It's just a matter of how many people you have. It's a matter of what you're trying to
this
get to.
So it really, for any given topic, it isn't a one-size-fits-all.
Correct.
We have to really, there's outreach in different ways.
Because, correct.
Because as soon as you told me about this meeting, I was like, well, why didn't I know about
well,
that?
Yeah, well, yeah, because you got to move your neighborhood. I mean, I think that the thing, one of the things I'm trying to drill into, though, is to say, look, you know, one of the things you can do if you care about the golf course in Mountain View and you have views, or better yet, you want to understand other people's views, you can begin conversations. You could begin conversations around your dinner table. You could begin conversations at our local pub or at your pickleball right. court and actually start talking and informing each other. Not saying that social media isn't the place to do that, because it is as well. Mm-hmm. But if that's the only place, right. you don't have the same kind of spirited conversation that you might in person. So it doesn't have to just be at the city forum.
Right, it might be spirited, but not – it might be mean-spirited. It
might be all caps and underlined, you know?
We got a question via email, and it's a good time to mention that dj@kptc.org, and I'll be looking. And it's long, and I haven't read the whole thing, so pardon
ooh,
me.
Ooh, fun.
If
surprise.
I'm going to stumble through it a little bit here. Could you please ask John and David – if they feel that there is enough time being allowed to really consider the potential for actual guardrails, I assume that's figurative guardrails, being built into the upzoning recommendations likely to be voted on April 1st. It seems that affordable housing is so critical for our successful workforce capacities going forward. However, we really need to get it right. How are we going to protect permanent affordability of new housing, and this is, I'm now beyond what I've read, for new housing, and keep at least some of the new housing permanently protected?
So I can jump in there. Mayor David Faber here. So
I think we recognize your voice by now.
I should hope so. I think, and one, we don't know what the action is going to be by April 1st. That's still being worked through. We're going to be having a joint meeting between the City Council and Planning Commission on, I think, is it February 17? Am I getting the date right?
I think it's the 13th.
Is this the work the Planning Commission has been doing recently?
Correct.
Getting community input, and they're going to be making recommendations from the input they gathered,
right.
And we don't know what those recommendations are yet.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's, I mean, that's one branch point that will determine whatever the outcome is going to be here. Now, whatever action we end up taking now is going to be probably pretty narrow compared to what action the City Council can take come the 2024 comprehensive plan update. That's going to be a probably much more significantly involved, and you know, that's going to have a much more iterative process, a lot mm-hmm. of community engagement, a lot of research being done. I mean, it's not that there isn't research being done on the components that are coming forward now, just that the pieces that we're dealing with now are much more tactical, small scale, presumably, than what we can do subsequently. Beyond that, I mean, I have fairly complicated, that actually boil down to very simple opinions on the deeper question being asked here. But fundamentally, I think that
this is about protecting them in a longer term. Yeah.
Right. So I think the key component for me is, if an action can be taken that will reduce the cost, that's positive. Mm-hmm. If it's going to increase the cost, that is going to be harmful to affordability in our community. Mm-hmm. And fundamentally, I think supply is a major, major part of that. Supply of housing.
Right. I would agree with that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this is so the question seems to be around the idea that it's affordable, which is mm-hmm. apparently under a threshold. And you're
right.
more looking at it as a continuum.
Because it is a continuum.
Yeah.
I mean, so just take, for instance, Seattle's mandatory housing affordability program that they introduced, I think, in 2018 or 2016, where any additional units have to either pay into an affordable housing fund or actually build mandatory affordability into the mm-hmm. the construction projects. A recent study found that it cut in half the production of smaller scale housing units. It only incentivized the creation of larger, more expensive single family homes.
It was really oriented towards people building big apartment buildings, and it it worked in that case, but right. it didn't work in the case of people just building a backyard.
Exactly. Right. And if we're taxing people from adding additional cost to building an additional ADU or something like that,
then it
decreases the cost. Decreases the ability of someone to actually build it in the first place. I spoke recently with Jenny Schutz, who's the probably nation, if not world's foremost expert on the idea of a mandatory affordability or what we call inclusionary zoning.
Uh-huh.
Who said basically, projects that don't have at least 50 units don't typically pencil out if we have a mandatory affordability component. Uh-huh. And that's borne out by all the data that I've been able to witness or observe.
So can we conclude that this is clearly something that at least you've thought of, and I presume the Planning Commission is considering and thinking about, and this is we might not have guardrails. We might have to say it didn't work in this case, but we don't know what that is yet, right? Whether that's going
to
go that way.
I think we'll have to explore what the options for guardrails are. I mean, that's the concern. That's when I go back to what I said, my fairly simple metric is, does it increase cost to produce a house,
right,
or does it decrease cost to produce a house? Because that's going to be kind of a threshold determination for whether a unit can even be considered, I mean, can even be produced to be affordable in the first place.
Yeah, right now we don't have any places to live, so the ones we have
very few.
We have a vanishing low vacancy rate, right, so we jack up prices because we can.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could rent like a 600 square foot one bedroom apartment for $3,000 a month if you wanted to. That seems a little unattainable for the average person. Just sort of,
it is bonkers. For me.
So yeah, and I guess maybe just to throw in too. I mean, I just love we are here in this community. We have very well engaged public officials and elected officials who know their space really well. And I love having this conversation back at the office with our planning and community development director and public works director and team, because we're just so excited about the conversation and what's possible. And this is not the only, I mean, in terms of process wise, the guardrails on this are, we have limited resources and limited time to do this first step. It's not the only step.
Exactly.
There's a multi-year process. And I'm encouraged by a look at different typologies, you know, because taking the, you know, what level of affordability and what's your, you know, area mean income and all that out of the equation just briefly, looking at things that might be, you know, cottage housing or tiny homes or, you know, triplexes and quadplexes. I mean, just more affordable housing also looks in different shapes for different needs, for different people, for different family sizes. Mm-hmm. And giving ourselves more tools to build more of what people are looking for is a good thing. So that's a big thing for 2023. I don't need to go to the annual report and the, you know, state of the city stuff, but this is going to be an ongoing conversation, much like golf course aquatics this year.
And if I could too, in terms of the you know, preserving units for mandatory affordability and so forth, there's affordable units. There's a couple things going on too. I mean, the city is engaged with the Evans Vista project. We're hoping to build up to 150 units of affordable and workforce housing.
I just want to clarify that, because when you say we are hoping to build, you're hoping you can create an environment where.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Thank you for the clarity.
I think that's worth clarifying.
It is. So right. So we're trying to design a site that's going to be possible and create
and provide the infrastructure to support.
Exactly.
That.
Which that reduces the cost to construct them, which makes it possible to be built in the first place, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
There's also a variety of local organizations that do affordable housing construction, and then if there are additional tools that we have to establish the quote-unquote guardrails to ensure units are developed in the first place that will be affordable, then by all means, I think that's a smart thing to look at.
So the bottom line on this is we're working through this both on a short term. There's a short term April kind of timeline, and then there's a longer term comprehensive plan update in 2024. So we're
correct.
We're looking at both. Okay,
that's exactly right.
We got another question.
All right.
All right, I'm just going to try reading. It says, I watched the two governors on the PBS NewsHour last night discuss how they worked with federal government to secure funds from the recent bills passed by the Biden administration to help with road repairs. Can our government do that for us? I hear there are not enough funds for rebuilding our deteriorated roads. So, and there's a second question, but that's the first one.
I think this is, there's going to be a little bit of a tag team between me and John here. So, so a couple components. I mean, we are getting a chunk of cash from the federal government, not for roads, but for actually going back to Evans Vista again, $2.4 million.
To do the lift station.
For the lift station so that we can make that, that project a go.
And that came through the county as a grant to the city.
Right.
We got a grant from the county as well, from the state as well, and from the federal government directly through Congressman Kilmer. So all three.
Right. The other thing to note is the state can share revenues with cities for road repairs as much as they want to. The reason we don't have money for road repairs locally is in large part due to Tim Eyman's $30 car tab provision back 15 years ago that gutted state transportation revenues, and the state shared revenues with local
jurisdictions. Also affects the ferries.
Also affects the ferries,
Thank you, Mr. Eyman.
So that's been a longstanding issue, but the very a nice thing that we can announce tonight, tonight, I don't, my head's all over the place. It's almost night, right? Is that we have $908,000 in our city budget in the year 2023.
Banked capacity.
Yep, the fire district annexation money
for
this year for road repairs. I mean, we are finally turning the big ship of city government around
there,
on this.
There is, I understand, a list of repairs that were proposed that are now, we hoped, that are funded based on that, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's, and I'll be honest, it's not a very long list.
No.
And I think when you look at money and the need, because as Mayor Faber says, there's been so many years and literally decades of underinvestment, playing catch up on 84 miles of road that the city maintains is really challenging. So yes, we are, you know, we've got great state and federal funding lineup for Discovery Road and a $5.5 million project there with very little city match, because those are federal and state resources. But that's a main road. That does not apply to my road, or likely to you who are listening. It probably doesn't apply to your road unless you live on an arterial. So you know, we as a community need to figure out how we do that. It's a very long list for very many needs. I'll be completely upfront. We have a lot of needs, and the roads are in bad shape. I think even just treading water on that $908,000 is going to be a challenge. And so I predict in the coming years, as a community, we need to ask that question. Do we want to make progress and recover some of the usability of our roads, or are we satisfied with their deteriorating condition?
Right. And with that in mind, there will be some discussion of additional funding sources for road repairs coming forward to council in the next however many months or next year or so.
Yeah. Yeah. The Financial Sustainability Task Force, which meets again for the second time tomorrow, is talking about community priorities. What we've heard over the course of many years and recently through functional plans like the Parks Recreational Open Space Plan, through the Comprehensive Streets Program, which is being advanced right now, priorities around housing and other priorities. And they're trying to think about this in a big picture way instead of doing the silos, like, oh, we have this need over here and we need some money for that. And then we have this need over here, we need some money for that. At some point, it just becomes too much. And so as a community, I think we need to have the conversation about, you know, it's a tough conversation, prioritization. We can't have everything for everything.
Right.
Unless we want a big bill.
And that's been the issue with the road repairs, is that they've, the bank capacity fire annexation money has been previously parceled out in little pieces. This year, you're doing it all in one big piece.
Right.
So that's good. Well, unbelievably, I have one more question.
Great.
And but
I feel beholden, just sorry to interrupt, beholden to another council member who asked me to say something on air, and I can do that after the question if you prefer.
Let's read the question, but this may be something we have to come back to. It says, can existing building codes and parcel zonings be eased or opened up to force mini home and ADU development? Reserving the golf course green and existing undeveloped green space. I didn't quite get that. Why break into new territory for housing when there's so much that can already be loosened up? But I think the main question is, can we do something about the zoning to encourage more small?
That would be my hope. Exactly. I mean, I don't think, affordable housing development on the land of the golf course was one of the things that's talked about in this process, but it's not very high on the priorities list according to the community thus far. If that changes, that'll probably be added back into the discussion. Yeah. I mean, it's part of the discussion now, but more significantly. But that's not doesn't look like it's likely the trajectory we're on. In terms of the zoning component, I would very much hope that that's the direction we're going to. We can't force people to build additional housing, but making it possible.
Yeah,
that I think is morally good.
Good.
It's about housing, and it's actually about the point in time count.
And which is coming up
exactly. And you know, when you look for this online, as I did not too long ago, KPTZ stories come up as point in time counts from years past. So I think it's important to, I don't know if you have a PSA going around now. I haven't heard one recently.
I don't think we do.
But on the 26th through the end of the month, volunteers from the local community will be assisting OLECAP in conducting an annual point in time count of individuals and households who do not have housing or are at risk of losing their housing. So you'll see confidential interviews conducted at local food banks, community centers, veteran service offices, and other places that we and our friends and our neighbors gather. So top marks to OLECAP and the volunteers who are doing that annual point in time count.
And getting an accurate count on our...
We've got to know who's out there.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, just for the sake of delivering services to them and making sure we're aware that these are members of our community, but also because that's how we get grant money for our affordable housing programs locally. So if we care about affordable housing, especially for the people who are the most vulnerable in the community, this point in time count is incredibly important.
Okay. We are actually, I think that's a good place to leave it. Great. We didn't even get to my question. We'll save that for the next time. Great discussion today. Thank you, David Faber, Mayor David Faber, for being with us. And John Morrow, is this your last visit before?
Last visit for a little while. We've got a great, I'm going to be out of town for a number of weeks.
We've got a great lineup lined up.
Great lineup. It'll be exciting when I'm gone. You'll have a number of council members, city staff, and others that'll come and grab the mic here. So have fun with it.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, not that you.
Are you now?
No, actually, I'm a little trepidatious about the fact that I won't be able to
good
go.
Save, good save. Good save.